Hello, I'm Nick Liard.
And I'm Mark Gentile from Sebri.com.
And this is Pints in Politics. And on the episode today, we have Pierre Saint-Amant, the PC, Progressive Conservative candidate for the Sudbury riding. And so as per the name of the podcast and video, we order ourselves a drink. And so we are going to have Sam bring them over.
What are you getting today, Nick?
Well, it's a surprise. Ooh. I went a little darker today, and so I'll explain mine. I got myself.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam.
It's called Lunch Money. I figured, you know, lunchtime around that time.
Because you work in media and you only have enough for lunch money.
Oh, yes. I actually used to save my lunch money and buy candy and never tell my mom.
I still do that.
Perfect. And you got, sir, what did you get?
I have a coffee.
Oh.
That's very conservative of you.
One cream. Well, it's also, since I am on the hustings and I'm doing a lot of door knocking and a lot of other activities, I figure it's probably not a good idea to have anything on my breath other than coffee.
That's a very good point. You don't want to break someone's door down.
Although some of this could certainly drive you to drink.
You're not going to ask me what I'm drinking, Nick?
Oh, yes. I totally forgot because it's been sitting there for like 3 years. So is that the same crack canoe?
That is the same crack canoe from our interview, the interviews that we did yesterday.
Oh.
As I said, I'm not much of a beer drinker, but I did enjoy the crack canoe. But I'm also frugal and not wasteful. So I asked Sam to keep this one on ice for me. I would finish it tomorrow.
It's like he took the strategy of, hey, I'm sick. Maybe I should let this go flat. And then I'll feel better.
It's possible. I mean, some people drink flat ginger ale when they're sick. I prefer flat beer when I'm sick.
So as per the start of the video, we must cheers, and then we can get the questions going.
Cheers.
There
cheers.
Go.
Still bubbly.
That's good. All right, after you, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to preface this with a little bit, because I want to get to know you a little bit better, know a little bit more about your experience. But, Andrew Scheer has never held a real sort of day job. He's been a politician since he was 25. He's had a six-figure salary since then. Despite what he says, he doesn't really know too much, I don't think anyway, what it means to be an average Canadian. But I'm not really interested in that. I'm interested in you. So I'm curious about your skill set, Mr. Saint-Amant. What have you learned over the course of your life and your career that you think would make you a good MP?
Well, I guess I should probably start by saying what my career consists of. Basically my whole adult life I've been in the military. I joined in 1975 as a reservist with a unit called the Sherbrooke Hussars, which was an armored corps unit. Thank you very much. So anyway, so I joined as a private, got kicked around a bit, of course, and after that they decided, I guess I couldn't drive very well or something like that. That's kind of the joke everybody says. So they sent me off on officer training. So I went on officer training in 1975, summer of 75. To me, it was more of a summer job. And it was, but if you sort of calculate the hourly wage, it wasn't very highly paid. So anyway, I joined the officer corps, and when I was training, I always said, well, I kind of need the money for school, so I'm not going to quit, but I'm going to bring all my kit in September. But 41 years later, I brought in my kit, so it's been a bit of a while. At that time, I was studying social sciences at what we call the CEGEP, which is the colleges in Quebec.
Yeah.
And so after that, I worked for Bell Canada for 2.5 years as a lineman.
Okay.
It's a very physical job, very very interesting too. You know, it's straight construction. I worked there 2.5 years, and of those 2.5 years, I was 2 years in living out of my suitcase. So after 2.5 years, I had a lot of money. I basically didn't spend my salary at all because my expense account paid for my living. And during the weekend, I was still with the reserve. So I was pretty busy. And so I decided I'm going to go back to school. And I went back to school in the CEGEP level, but in information technology. So I had a lot of money. So, of course, very responsibly, I put my money in the bank. And there you go. I was ready to go back to school. And, of course, I blew it all on a sports car. So that's so that was my...
What kind of sports car?
It was you probably never heard of this, but a Datsun 240ZX.
I remember the Datsuns.
Yeah. And of course, now Nissan there. So anyway. So fast forward a bit after I graduated, I kicked around small jobs for a while. And then I transferred into the regular Army as a signals officer. And as a signals officer, I've had two United Nations missions, one in Africa and one in the Middle East, And I was also in a NATO posting, North Atlantic Treaty Organization posting, where I was responsible for all communications operations in Canada for NATO.
Wow.
I worked for NATO for a while, and then I was at 5 Brigade, which is the Francophone Brigade in near Valcartier. There's 3 brigades, and that's the French one. And then I moved on. I was a signals officer at the headquarters unit, and then also at the signal squadron unit. And after 5 years, they sent me to Ottawa.
Wow.
I was a captain then.
I don't want to go through your whole CV because we could be apparently here for the rest
of
this.
My strategy is, you won't be able to ask me any other embarrassing questions.
We don't want to embarrass you. No. We just want to get to know you a little bit,
okay,
a little
sure.
bit better. But what I'd like to know is, from all of, I mean, you obviously you've had quite a varied career,
yeah.
over the, and you spent 41 years, I think you told me, with the military. And again, echoing Nick, thanks for your service. What did you learn from those things that you can apply
yeah.
to being a politician, to being an MP, to representing the people of the Sudbury riding?
Yeah, I was kind of getting to a more significant experience for a general experience, and mm-hmm. basically there's two things I did what I think was an excellent experience from a point of view of from a people point of view. I think throughout my career I've been managing people, and one of the big things I was very proud of, and I'm hitting the desk after you told me not
okay.
to.
We're not going to kick you out.
No.
So I've been managing people all most of my career, really. Sometimes you're more in a staff job, but even at then, you're managing very, very experienced soldiers, civil servants and contractors, engineers and the like. And one of the jobs that was, I kind of spoke about my experience is people management. And one of the big challenges is when you're on a United Nations mission, it's kind of keeping people motivated and, quote unquote, out of trouble. So that's a very, that's really where the tire meets the road there, because these people are far away from home. They hear about the problems they have back home, and it's a very challenging environment. And of course, you're living through some of the same things. So so that's a very, very important. I think I've learned to understand people. I work with people from all across Canada, and it's been an excellent experience that, mm-hmm. from a people management point of view. From more of a sort of a project management point of view, one of my jobs that was really my favorite job when I was promoted to major was as the life cycle material manager for all Army communications equipment inside the Canadian Army. And that's basically anything that's deployable. And that was an $80 million budget, and I was
sure.
the man for that. I had about 30 very, very experienced people working for me. Engineers who were civil servants, engineers who were also military or contractors. So I think those two elements, experience as a personnel manager,
mm-hmm.
Where I've learned to sort of work with people to solve their problems and to keep the people motivated to do a good job. And I think my responsibilities as a life cycle material manager.
But okay.
There's one more job I'd like to mention. Is I was also the cryptographer.
You have a lot to say, Pierre.
Yeah. Oh, well, so, hey, 41 years is a lot of time, right?
But so we only have 20 minutes.
We're going to make bullet points on the video so people can follow along.
No problem.
Is that what we're going
to
do?
Check off.
That's a good idea.
So just one more thing is,
sure.
I was also the in charge of all cryptography for the Canadian Army at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
So you had,
really
you, had cool. You must have had a high level of security clearance.
It was off the roof.
So the more
it
you
was off
on,
the roof.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's it, some people say top secret. In Canada, we call it
off the roof. So the more you hit on the desk, the more you can pick up a conversation.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Stop.
I'm trying to. There you go.
See what I'm
he's
yeah.
signaling. He's signaling to someone.
Oh, we never actually learned Morse code.
Oh,
it's pretty well. It's a bit passé. Some of our guys learn Morse code because we still use it in some contexts. But yeah.
Very cool.
So
go ahead.
I pretty well.
It's Nick's question.
Nick's
shifting
turn. Is it
focus
sure.
completely? You're relatively new to the city of Sudbury. I think just over 2 years you've lived here, correct?
That's great.
What is something that you wish people had told you about the city that they didn't before moving here?
You know, it's kind of a fascinating city. I'm not sure if I expected people to tell me about it, but, you know, I live in Canada, so the weather is exactly what you'd expect. But one of the things I was fascinated by is that it's basically a lesson in geography and history, you know, and I'm a history buff. I'm, mm-hmm. You know, obviously a political science buff. But geography-wise, I mean, this is the Canadian Shield, and, you know, mm-hmm. there's lakes, and I've flown over... Northern Ontario, and it's just lake after lake after lake. So it's a beautiful area. You know, it's just incredible. And from a historical point of view, I mean, we have reserves for the Aboriginal communities. We have mining. We have forestry products. I mean, this is the history of Canada. I mean, the coureurs de bois, who were the voyageurs, who were, you know, traveling this area hundreds of years ago. And it's a fascinating place. And I have to admit, I discovered it when I came here. And I don't know if you want me to mention why I came here.
Well, that'll be saved for another question, perhaps.
Sure. Okay, go ahead.
So. The Conservative platform plans to get rid of the carbon tax, but still pledges to live up to Canada's commitment to the Paris Agreement.
Absolutely.
On emissions targets. So what's wrong with the carbon tax, and how is the Tory plan better?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think from a point of view, what's wrong with the carbon tax, and you're absolutely right, we are not climate change deniers. We believe in climate change, and mm-hmm. we believe we have to do something, and that's one of the challenges that we were talking about. But from a practical point of view, and I've been fairly active on Facebook, and you know, right now the carbon tax is not really enough to do anything. So it makes sense that it's not really doing anything. It's not an effective tax. But what it is very inflationary, because as it goes up and up and up, and this is what the plan of basically all the other parties is, it's going to increase, you know, to a point where it's exponentially. And the idea behind the carbon tax, as I see it, is basically to make it painful to consume energy. Now, I'm not saying that's totally wrong, because to a certain extent, that's what we have to do. But it's we're basically going to be totally uncompetitive, and everything you see around here, the food, the chairs, everything has traveled by truck. So part of the carbon tax, like the tip of the iceberg of the carbon tax, is when you go and gas up. So now it's kind of within that margin of error. It's not very high, but if you look at what's going to happen over the next few years, and this is according to every party, it's going to go up exponentially. And eventually, I think I'm old enough, I should say, to have lived through the OPEC crisis in the 70s, and that caused great upheaval. And that was sort of across the board in every country. Mm-hmm. So every country kind of felt the pain at the same time. And here what we're doing is we're going to feel the pain in Canada. But don't forget, Canada is only 1.6% of the global emissions. And with our boreal forests, we are going to, you know, we do absorb a lot of carbon. So what we're seeing here, and this is our plan, is we're basically going to we're going to look at technology. There's a lot of technology out there, and what I always say is, let's make oil part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem, because okay. There are solutions. The way I see a lot of environmentalists, and this is true of people who really are committed to causes, they see an all or nothing solution. Whereas if we reduce, let's say, the carbon emissions from you know, our vehicles to 50%, well, it's not a 100% solution, but it's a 50% solution. So there's a lot of technology out there that's very, very promising. There's a lot of technology that exists at the moment of reducing carbon. And the thing we have to understand, too, here in Canada, that we are a small part of the problem. And unfortunately, Saudi Arabia and Venezuela aren't going to stop pumping oil. I mean, that's their lifeblood as an economy.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So we have to look at the global point of view. And that's another point that Andrew Scheer's three-point policy has. The third is once we develop our technology here in Canada, and we are great innovators here in Canada, face it, we're it's a modern society. We have a lot of smart people. I mean, just down the road here, you know, at the university and at other institutions, we are able to develop a lot of really, really possible solutions.
Sure.
So once we do that, well, then we'll be able to export that, and then we can really work on a global solution.
That sounds good.
Another point about the...
One point that I found awesome about that was it was climate change question, and he said tip of the iceberg in there. I like that. That's the one point I got.
What do you got for him, Nick?
I hope somebody else got something else for that.
I think so. first, it's a two-part question, and the first part is, have you ever had poutine?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay, all right, that's good.
Not lately, because I'm on a keto diet.
Okay. Well, in your younger years, then.
I'm pretty sure poutine is keto.
Yeah, no? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, those potatoes are... I never saw a keto potato, but maybe...
sorry, Nick.
That's okay.
Maybe radishes or something.
Who has the better poutine? Quebec, which you've lived in, and Sudbury.
Oh, it has to be Sudbury. Come on.
Okay.
Good answer.
All right.
He really wants to win this election.
Absolutely. I want to win
this. He knows on which side his poutine is better.
We don't even have to vote anymore, right?
Yeah.
I think that's it. We're done.
Well, that's my question. On to you.
Okay.
Short and sweet.
Sure.
Like delicious gravy. I don't know.
Short gravy?
I don't know.
All right.
I was trying something.
It didn't work. So you were speaking about oil. I actually wanted to ask about oil. So part of the Tory plan is to end foreign oil imports and to get pipelines built across the country. And as we all know, pipelines are highly unpopular in many parts of Canada, particularly in Indigenous communities. And people are fighting tooth and nail to keep pipelines from crossing their lands, crossing their territories, crossing their reserves. And how could a Tory government, I mean, the Liberals spent 4 years trying to get pipelines built, didn't have a lot of luck, encountered a lot of roadblocks. How could the Tories do any different?
That's a very good question, I'd say. I guess the first thing I'd like to say is pipelines kind of have a bad reputation. But in my book, pipelines can be part of the solution. And I always bring out this example, you know, being ex-military, I bring out a lot of military examples. There's a pipeline system in Western Europe called CEPS, Central European Pipeline System. And this pipeline system was created during the Cold War. And it was basically to resupply air bases across Europe.
Okay.
French bases, Canadian bases. People forget that we had quite a bit, quite an air force over in Europe in the 50s and 60s. American bases and things like that. Now what it's doing is resupplying airfields. Huge airports like Frankfurt, Paris, Zaventem, I forget the name of the one in Brussels. And anyway, so all of these airports are getting fuel through this CEPS. And my figures are a couple of years old, so now it's probably more than that. But a few years ago, they calculated that you would need 800,000 more trucks on the road in Europe. So now it's probably 1 million trucks that would be required to resupply all of these aircraft. So it's a huge, I mean, an Airbus 380, I think it has the weight of about 3 double-decker buses in fuel. I mean, this is just incredible amounts of fuel. So I think part of the solution is to educate people that a pipeline is part of the solution to reducing climate change because you're going to get rid of
I understand that, but that wasn't my question.
I'm sorry, I'm getting to it.
My question is really, how do you think, and you know, those sorts of issues are those sorts of supports for pipeline, those have been explained to a lot of people in the past. My question is, regardless of the potential benefits of pipelines, thousands of Canadians are incredibly opposed to them and will fight them tooth and nail. The Liberals have had very little success in trying to get pipelines built. How can the Tories do any better? Well, that's what I want to know.
Well, you know, that's as I said, that's a good question, and I believe part of it is education. I think we have people that are very, very radical in their beliefs about anti-pipeline. But if you look at sort of the information in the background, I can understand someone that says, okay, 100% no oil, nothing. But I don't think that's realistic. But if you look at and I believe education is probably the key to it. And take, for example, the refinery in Saint-Romuald, Quebec. And, of course, I live near Quebec City, so I know a lot about that area. They bring up petroleum up the St. Lawrence. You know, all these tanker groups goes up there in a very fragile environment and also an environment that's actually very difficult to navigate because of the currents. So I think education has to be brought forward, because I don't think anyone thinks that he's ready to get rid of his car. I mean, electrical vehicles are, you know, a good idea. There's no problem there, but it's not a total solution either. Mm-hmm. So I think education has to be it, and you have to work. And I don't believe in forcing anything down anyone's throat, but I think we have to work with the Aboriginal communities, show them that it's in their interest. And you know, obviously, if they see their interest, financial and would you say, environmentally, mm-hmm. I think you could probably bring people forward on that.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Because
yeah.
there's no, nobody is 100%, sorry, but no, no one is 100% okay. Against, you know, well, I guess I'm going to say no community is 100% one way or the yeah. other. I mean, people are sure. divided. Sorry. Yeah.
No, ahead. No, we can just wind you up and watch them
yeah,
go.
Exactly. Maybe they could make a song, like hire Nickelback and come up with like a jingle to educate people. You know, the don't you put it in your mouth. That song
yes.
worked, right?
We could double that as a promotion for Nickel the Metal as well. Bring Nickelback.
Boom.
Mind blown.
Next question. What is the first concert that you've ever been to or
oh,
ever
wow.
went to?
I'd have to say Michael Jackson.
Michael
really?
Jackson? Where did you see Michael Jackson?
At the Big O in Montreal.
Which tour? Cool. That is pretty interesting. Which tour was that?
Oh, I haven't a clue. I
have
a clue.
The shirt style, right?
I would make a stab at the year, but it, geez.
Would have been the 80s?
I had to check which girlfriend I was with.
Oh,
that
nice.
Time.
Oh, all right. Nice.
But, boy, I tell you.
See? Didn't even need to give him beer.
No,
he's already just half filling his whole life.
Which one is this coffee here?
So,
yeah, no.
Do you know who opened for Michael Jackson on that
oh,
tour?
Oh, God, no. I'm afraid not. No,
okay.
You know, you're going back.
Well, that's what I was trying to do.
70s, like late
70s. That's a tough time to remember
but,
things.
You know, the ironic thing is that's probably one of the last concerts I'd been to as
oh,
well.
Okay. Yeah.
Although I did go and see Neil
Michael
Young
Jackson
there.
Had, a,
yeah, there
had
go.
An interesting
yeah.
Kind of thing on you. So I just wanted to ask you, I'm going to go serious.
Okay.
I know. All right.
It's so, your show.
4 years ago, one of the big topics was legalization of weed in marijuana. And you know, we had this
cannabis.
Idea. Cannabis. Thank you. We had this idea for this podcast and video series that we would bring a joint, a marijuana cigarette, and ask all the candidates if they would partake. And we yeah. were like, you know what? That's probably too far to go
sure.
for this first, that maybe is 4 years down the line.
Yep.
I'm
going to
stick with my coffee, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
but it was a huge topic of debate in the last election. Now, 4 years later, it's legalized. What are your views on the legalization of it? And if the conservatives get into power, what happens with it?
Well, I think the policy right now is we're not going to change the legislation at the moment. I mean, it'll be a kind of a work in progress to see how it comes, you know, how the consumption of marijuana, how if it does affect society to any great degree. But we're kind of, I think we're adopting sort of a wait and see. A wait-and-see attitude on this. But one,
that's kind of like if you get stoned on a Saturday night. Well, oh, we'll wait and see.
I have to admit something. Can I admit something about
yes.
pot?
Sure.
I've never tried pot. I'm probably the only person in Sudbury that hasn't. But the
thank you for being in the military
well,
and
yeah.
not doing pot.
Well, I didn't want to wind up in a Crowbar Hilton, is what we call the hoosegow, and because military prisons do not have color television, believe me. And one
he
of the things
like
is
he speaks from experience.
Well, you were talking about my security clearance, and of course I had a very very high security clearance. So one of the things they do is they haul you under carpet and tell you what's going to happen to you if you. Well, I have all sorts of little military expressions that are obscene right now that are coming to my mind, but
we should have got him that beer.
Obviously they wanted to show you if you get into trouble there. How's that?
Where's the coolest place your security clearance got you into?
Probably at the NATO Maintenance and Supply Agency in Luxembourg.
Oh, I thought he was going to say the Diefenbunker.
Yes,
I well,
thought
I've
Area
been,
51
I worked
might have
in
been.
A, well, I worked just downhill from the Diefenbunker. We
nice.
Had our NATO satellite ground cool. terminal just down there. If you go to the Diefenbunker, I've been there many times because that was our support station. Just downhill from it, you have this huge golf ball, and that was us.
Nice.
Yeah,
very
which
cool.
is
that's
our satellite
me,
ground
yeah.
turbo.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much. Again, Pierre Saint-Amand from the PC Party, the Progressive Conservatives, the candidate for the Sudbury riding. Cheers.
Oh,
thank you
cheers.
For joining us.
Cheers, Pierre.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, yeah.
And don't forget to vote October 21st, folks.
Absolutely. And just one thing I'd like to add is having served in the United Nations in Africa, you see people lining up for hours to vote.
Yeah.
At 2 degrees above the equator, so it's extremely hot sun and everything. And these guys, it's an imperfect democracy, and I guess we have one as well, but it's worth voting.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much,
Pierre.
Pierre.